The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So tonight, for the topic, I'd like to continue the theme that I've been covering or exploring for the last many weeks, which is a set of 10 qualities that we can really look at as the kind of the ground of our practice, the qualities that support us in our practice, both in daily life and in our meditation. And this list is called, in Pali, called the Paramis, translated often as perfections or supreme qualities, something like that. And the 10 qualities are generosity, ethics, renunciation, wisdom, energy, patience, truthfulness, determination, loving kindness, and equanimity. And so I've been covering about one a week, although I spent a couple weeks on some of them, just because it seemed like there was a lot to talk about. And tonight, I'd like to explore the topic of patience. As I explore these, I'm enjoying exploring how they connect the qualities, the list that I offered. You know, they can be thought of as qualities that support each other. You know, they're kind of like strands of an interwoven rope. How the strands of the rope kind of support each other and make up that firmness of the rope. But they also can be understood to each one support the next. There's a way in which the teaching is around the Paramis is said that like generosity supports the arising or the cultivation of ethics. Because as we explore our relationship with other people, explore being generous, having an open heart towards other people, it's very natural that we begin to want to behave ethically, that open-hearted connection encourages that ethical connection. And then it's said that likewise that the second quality kind of supports or perfects, which is how the list got its name, it perfects the first, because we can see that as we cultivate ethics, we are actually offering one of the most beautiful gifts we can to the world. We're offering a gift of safety, of that people do not have to be afraid in our presence. And so in this way, they are understood to support each other. And so patience, the one we're looking at this evening, lies between energy and truthfulness. And energy it's not just like normal energy that we think of. It's the energy directed towards the cultivation of understanding, energy directed towards our practice, energy directed towards understanding how we get caught, how we struggle, how we suffer. And so it's basically wise energy we could talk about, that is what that parami is about. And we can reflect that energy itself is a kind of a neutral quality that we can direct in many different ways. And so the energy of this list is the energy that is directed towards opening the heart, connecting with our fellow human beings with love, with compassion. It's the energy directed towards meeting ourselves with love, opening towards what's happening for ourselves in the present moment. And so that work of energy, of meeting our minds, you know, when we sit down in meditation and we start to look at what's going on in there, it's sometimes not such good news. You know, we see a lot of struggle, we see a lot of frustration, we see our minds kind of reactive. You know, we think about something and we see our mind getting all tied up in knots around it. So we see how some of our thoughts can trigger reactive emotions. And we see that with our practice. We open in our meditation and we see, wow, there's a lot of stuff going on in there that is painful. And it's a, there's a lot of stuff that, in a way, it's like we're not really, it's acknowledging and recognizing that our habits, you know, what's been cultivated in our lives, the habits of mind that we have practiced in our lives kind of take us in a direction often, our habits often take us in a direction of reactivity rather than responsiveness, of skillful responsiveness. And so we see this. You know, we apply our energy to our looking at our own minds. We apply our energy to recognizing how we are in relationship. We see we're judgmental. We see we're dismissive. We see that there are times when we're connected and feeling feeling kindness and compassion, but other times when we're feeling anger, resistance. So the work of energy directed towards what's happening here often reveals things that require patience for us to explore, patience for us to open to. In the guided meditation, I talked about cultivating a kind of an allowing stance towards what's going on. And the way that this works isn't that we allow, it's not that we're allowing our reactive emotions to just simply run the show, but we are cultivating an allowing observation, a kind of a being with. I like the words being with. And so we notice anger arising in our hearts. And rather than being jumping on the bandwagon of that anger and you know, following through on it, thinking all the thoughts about it or acting out of it, we explore what it means to open to the experience of being a human being that feels anger in this moment. So it's a being with the experience of anger. And that being with, it's like it creates a bigger container. It creates a space in which that anger can be felt, can be known, can start to be understood, and can begin to release, can begin to be informed by wisdom, by compassion, instead of being just informed by its own view of get rid of that thing, that person's wrong, that person's bad. So we begin to explore what it means to allow these difficult states, kind of a being with. And that being with is a very different, it is radically different than being angry. Being with anger is a very different experience than being angry. And so it takes a little bit of trust to begin to explore that possibility, and patience to explore these difficult states, because it's very humbling. It's really humbling as we look inside and see things that we don't actually want to see. It's tempting to say, oh, that's not me, or to kind of cover it over, or to just pretend it's not there. That may be a kind of a habitual way that we've worked with things in the past. It's like, oh, you know, I will just squash that down. I'm feeling angry, but I'm not going to be angry right now. And so there's a way in which we are afraid of those difficult reactive states. And so we aren't able to have this patient response of being with those difficult states. And so the energy we direct to our practice requires patience for that that energy to come to fruition. So the energy directed towards our practice gets stronger, it strengthens, it as we patiently do the practice. So that's the kind of the connection between energy and patience. And then patience leads on to truthfulness. And this one, I think I'll just speak about this briefly now. I think it'll make more sense as we go. But as we open to allowing our experience, as we open to allowing what's happening, as we begin to gain the capacity to allow our experience. And it takes time, actually, and this is patience, patience. It takes time, it takes patience to cultivate the skills to allow those difficult states and to be able to meet them with an open heart. And so we have to have the patience to, at times, learn some skills. You know, there are times when we try to turn to or be with something as challenging as a reactive emotion, and we find ourselves caught by that emotion. I sometimes use the phrase, we end up going down the rabbit hole of that emotion, being that emotion instead of being with it. So we go down the rabbit hole, and if we find that trying to be with an emotion makes us be that emotion, takes us down the rabbit hole of it, then it's useful. So the wisdom of energy there, of our practice, helps us to recognize, okay, maybe the mindfulness, the being with capacity isn't quite strong enough to meet that one, that difficult emotion. And so some other skill, some other tool might be useful. Redirecting the attention to something else, or I often teach a simple practice that I call useless gazing, which if something's really sticky, it's a useful tool. You just look at something for a second. And in a room like this, I would look at corners. Look at something for a second, and then switch and look at something else for a second, and then switch and look at something else for a second. And just do that for even about, 30 seconds to a minute can break the mind that has gotten stuck to something really sticky. So we learn to apply our energy in skillful ways. So patience is also about recognizing when we have to do something else, take some action, maybe, go outside into nature or just turn the attention to something else. Sometimes I call it changing the channel. We just change the channel. We try to put our attention on something else to help us to balance the mind. But as we are able, as the capacity for meeting what's happening in the present moment strengthens, and we're able to, what's happening right now is frustration. I can meet that. I can be with it. I can feel it. We begin to cultivate the allowing that I talked about, the allowing what's happening in the present moment. Basically, opening to the truth of what is already here. This is how it connects to truthfulness, how patience connects to truthfulness. Not truthfulness of speech. That's a piece of this parami of truthfulness, but the truthfulness of acknowledging what's happening right now is what's happening right now. A non-resistance to the truth. That's in that territory of allowing. We open to and allow our experience as we gain the capacity to meet our experience. Just as it is, our capacity to meet the truth and not resist what the truth is strengthens also. So a non-resistance to truth is moving us in the direction of that cultivating that parami of truthfulness. And I'll just drop in right here. I'll say a little bit more about this in a moment, but non-resistance to truth doesn't mean non-action. You know, that as we see what's happening, we see, yes, this is what's happening in the world. This is what's happening here in my heart. I just talked a moment ago, seeing clearly what is happening here, finding ourselves down the rabbit hole. Action is required. We need to take some action to put our attention somewhere else. And likewise with meeting what's happening in the world. Aligning with the truth of what's happening in the world doesn't mean that we... Non-resistance to recognizing this is what's happening in the world doesn't mean that we don't take some action to speak out or to try to change things. What it means, though, is not adding. You know, resistance takes so much energy. When we resist what's happening, we are already fighting with, we're fighting with what is already here, we're fighting with ourselves. And essentially, the non-resistance, the, partly the way I see it is the non-resistance to the truth frees up energy to be able to skillfully respond instead of being in reactive mode or hatred mode. So the non-resistance to the truth, in a way, I look at as freeing up wise energy to act in the world, to alleviate suffering, to speak out against injustice, but not with anger and hatred, with compassion, with kindness, with wisdom. So patience itself, there's kind of three aspects to patience that I find useful to explore, kind of three, you know, facets, maybe we could say, of patience. And those that I'll speak to tonight are persistence, that patience has a quality of persistence, and this is connected to energy in a way that, you know, just persistence of just keeping going, you know, so connected to energy, persistence. Then there's an aspect of what we might call forbearance of difficulty, being able to stand with difficulty, that is an aspect of being patient. And another aspect of patience is allowing, acceptance. That feels to me like it comes almost as the fruit of patience in a way. And yet we can cultivate that, we can incline in that way. We can explore what might it mean to allow this? What might it mean if we feel resistance? What might it mean to explore even allowing that resistance? It's great the way this practice works. Whatever's there, if there's resistance there, okay, can I be with resistance? So exploring each of these a little bit. So the persistence side of it. To me, this points to some extent, the active quality of patience. You know, sometimes the word patience for us sometimes evokes kind of settling back and, you know, kind of like, well, be patient, you know, a non-active place. The patience of, you know, you have to wait. The quality of patience in our practice isn't about passively waiting. There's a kind of a waiting in that we can't control results so much, but we actively, with the direction that we're headed, with the wise energy, we're headed in the direction of learning about our hearts, learning about our minds, learning about connection, skillful relationships with our fellow human beings, and learning about meeting our difficult states of mind. So we're exploring that with patience. Thanissaro Bhikkhu gives an analogy from one of his teachers about the kind of patience that we're looking at in this practice of getting familiar with our difficult states of mind as being like a farmer. A farmer, I'll read this piece. Those of you who've never lived on a farm, even you know that farmers don't have an easy life. They work hard, especially in Thailand. Thanissaro Bhikkhu's teacher was Thai. They work hard, especially in Thailand, where they don't have a lot of labor-saving devices. When the time comes to do what needs to be done, you have to do it quickly. In other words, when the rice grains are ready, you have to harvest them quickly before the mice get to them. You have to take care of them quickly, winnow the rice quickly before any late season rains come to spoil it. So it's not a matter of being slow or casual, this patience of a farmer. The patience of a farmer is the sort that knows you can't plant the rice today and expect to have the grains ripened tomorrow. It's going to take time, and during that time, it's going to require work. And that's kind of the way our practice is. You know, we cultivate a capacity to meet our experience, to be with our experience. But we recognize that the results aren't going to happen like that, that it does take time to learn that skill. And so the patience of our practice is not about just settling back and saying, well, maybe someday I'll be able to be with this. But it's actively exploring, okay, you know, can I be with this? What might it mean to be with frustration? And seeing if that's possible, looking at, exploring how does it land in the body? What's the experience in the body? What's the mood in the mind when frustration is there? So you explore the possibility of meeting the present moment experience, the human experience of that difficult emotion. And there are times when we see we get caught. Our mind goes off. We get caught in thought or reactivity. Sometimes we just wake up and, oh, okay, just try again. Just keep trying. That patience of keep trying. It's not passive. Our practice is not passive. We keep encouraging that receptive, allowing stance to our experience, that being with stance, and recognizing that sometimes we have to do something else, like the useless gazing, to kind of change the channel if we're really caught. So we explore the patience of just simply persisting with the practice. So one of the keys around this persistence is patience with results. You know, patience with, you know, when it seems like nothing is happening in our practice. The practice of mindfulness, it kind of has a slow, to me at least, it can be very gradual. How we learn to be with our experience. It's like each moment of mindfulness, there's a little bit of understanding, a little bit of meeting that's possible. And it begins to gently, very slowly transform our minds as we begin to recognize that at times it is possible to be with something. And as we see, what does it mean to be with something? And we see, wow, you know, actually, not only is it, you know, am I not actually acting on that? You know, so when there's the anger and I am being angry, that's one experience. But the being with anger, we see, is a very different experience. There is a sense of space around the anger, a sense of capacity to meet that. And so we have these little moments of seeing just how valuable the practice is. So the gradual nature of the practice, the Buddha gave an analogy about just how gradual it is. And I love this analogy because for me it really resonates with how so much of my practice has been. He talked about, you know, if there's a shipwreck, if there's a ship that has crashed and, you know, the parts of the ship are strewn all over the beach. In particular, he points to the rope, the rigging of the ship, and says, you know, each day that rope is on the beach. There's a little bit of wind, a little bit of sun, sand, waves that, you know, wear away at that rope. And if you went back every single day and said, okay, how much of the rope is gone today? You're not going to see much change. But over the course of a year, that rope begins to fall apart. You go back a year later and you try to pick up the rope and it falls apart in your hands. And so the practice is very like that. The gentle, persistent meeting of experience has that power of moment by moment, just little grain by little grain, beginning to wear away at the patterns, the habits of our minds, beginning to orient our minds in a new direction. It seems in some ways, I mean, when I first heard this teaching of try being with your anger rather than being angry, it wasn't framed in exactly that way, but you know, just trying to notice that you're angry rather than acting on anger, I think that might have been how it was framed. It was not at all obvious to me how that would be of any help to me. But very quickly I began to understand that that space of being with had a power to it that allowed the mind to let go of the anger, that allowed the mind to not be so caught by that pattern. And, you know, very quickly, actually, when I started practicing this very simple instruction of being with, I began to see that formerly, when I had just, you know, I hadn't had any tools for this, I would just get caught in the rabbit hole of anger for long stretches of time. I would find myself just frozen at my computer, non-functional, unable to think, unable to work. I was just so caught in the anger. And as soon as I began to turn towards and be with, oh, this is what it's like to be a human being that feels angry, well, the first thing I noticed is this hurts. This is unpleasant. And that is actually, you know, it's obvious when you actually begin to feel into it, but this is part of the way the mindfulness works. We see what's going on in the present moment. We recognize these reactive emotions are actually not conducive to well-being, and our mind begins to orient in a new direction. And so I found very quickly that, you know, wow, this hurts. You know, what do I do with this? I had no idea. You know, it's like I had very little instruction in mindfulness at that point when I first met this practice. But, you know, it's like, wow, I don't know what I do, but I guess I'll go back to work. Now, that was different because I was no longer so caught by the anger. I could shift to something else. The mindfulness allowed that space to shift away from being caught by the anger. This is the power of being with. It's so different than being in, being in. So over time, we start to see the benefit. We start to understand the value of this persistence, this gentle persistence. And that very value begins to strengthen the understanding of how patience works too. So we begin to understand, oh, this persistence is useful. So we not only understand a little bit about how the mindfulness works, we understand that it's useful to just keep going. This gentle wearing away, this gentle little by bit wearing away. You know, it's often not so useful to look back and say, well, how much did I learn today? Or what benefit did I gain from mindfulness today? But we can look back over the course of 6 months or a year or 5 years or however long you've been practicing and begin to recognize, yeah, things are different. I mean, even in that first few months of practice when I started exploring my anger, that very first few months, I could see a difference in my relationship to anger. So that kind of recognition or seeing, you know, this patience is worth it. Then the second aspect, the tolerance or forbearance. I've talked about some of this a little bit and talking about working with difficulty because, you know, tolerance is, you know, it's really about looking at a patient relationship with suffering, with difficulty. When things are difficult, that not to give up, not to give in. And so to neither give up or give in takes some capacity to stretch the heart to be able to hold the discomfort, the suffering, the stress. So there's a kind of a way in which it's not a tolerating suffering to say, you know, well, this is okay. But it's a learning to have the capacity to hold discomfort, pain, struggle, challenge. So this is related to learning what it means to meet difficulty rather than reacting to difficulty. And again, this can have a quality of being active. What we've talked about are, you know, the exploration of meeting, exploring what does it mean to be with a difficult emotion. That's an active thing. You know, it's interesting. It's this interesting both active and receptive stance that we recognize this is what it's like for a human being to feel this difficult emotion. But there's an active quality to curiosity, to being interested in, wow, what is it like for a human being to feel this? Kind of taking our own personal perspective out and being more curious about, you know, this is a human experience. Whatever difficulty I'm experiencing right now, this is not just about me. It's not just me that experiences this. This happens all over. 7 billion people out there. Probably they've all experienced something like this at some point in their lives, maybe even now. And so we can begin to recognize, okay, this is a human experience. And as we recognize our experience as human, it can help us to have some patience to meet it, to have some interest, some active interest in this. One teacher, James Baraz, talks about a way in which he worked with exploring what it might mean to be with experience. And he used this kind of let's take the stance of what does it mean to be a human being that is feeling something? And so I'll pretend that I'm an alien. I'm an alien, and I've been sent by the mothership to take up residence in a human body and report back. What is it like when human beings feel this? And so there you are. It's like, okay, frustration. Oh, okay, this is what it's like when human beings feel frustration. It kind of takes a little bit of the I or the me out of it and brings a sense of curiosity. It's very active. It's not passive. The patience of tolerance is not a just settle back and I just have to be with this. It's curious. What is this? How does it feel? How does it impact the body? What kind of other emotions does it connect to? What kind of thoughts does it make me think? All kinds of ways that these reactive emotions impact us. And so it's not passive in that way. Even just the learning to be with is not passive. And then there are times, especially in the world, you know, in meeting suffering in the world. You know, it's not just about meeting our own suffering. In the Buddha, the teachings of the Buddha are not simply about looking inward. He talked a lot about recognizing whether there's suffering internally or externally. Is what's happening creating suffering for yourself or another being, or for both? And so to kind of have that stance of being curious about, is there suffering happening in the world? Is there anything I'm contributing? Is there a way I can support alleviating that suffering? And so there are definitely times in the world, you know, we explore what does it mean to meet suffering in the world? The first step is, can I stretch my heart to actually not shut down when I'm meeting suffering in the world? That so often happens, and the shutting down around suffering in the world, I'd say, is one of the main reasons why there's so much anger and hatred and bitterness and injustice in the world. So the exploration, the first thing we need to do is see, can we stretch our hearts to not shut down? So opening our hearts to the suffering of the world, opening our hearts to the injustice. This is a learning to be with the suffering of the world. And as our hearts open to that without shutting down, there's a very natural response in the heart that wants to do something, that wants to act to alleviate that suffering, that wants to act from compassion. And so this is a very different approach to acting in the world, not from anger at the injustice, but from really kind of feeling the pain of it and wanting to act to alleviate the suffering. That's compassion. That's compassion. And so opening to tolerating, I would say tolerating suffering doesn't mean non-action. I'm inspired by Gandhi's approach. You know, he used this phrase, you know, how do we meet suffering in the world? Non-violent, non-passive, non-cooperation with rule, the English rule in India. And so it is, it's not violent. It comes from the heart of compassion, of meeting the suffering. It's not passive. It doesn't just sit there and witness. And it's not cooperating either with the suffering. It's not buying into the patterns that keep generating the suffering. And so this is a challenge for us, especially in, it's just been such a painful few months, you know, with all of the terrorist attacks and the deaths, the police officers dying and being shot, and the anger being cultivated and sent out into the world, particularly in the Republican convention and in the Republican candidate for president. I actually decided recently I'm not going to stay silent anymore. You know, this the frame of being a Dharma teacher, we typically don't address politics, but I just actually realized, you know, this isn't about politics for me. This is about anger and hatred and that quality. It's like, you know, irrespective of political views, the qualities that Donald Trump is putting into the world is not the qualities I want to see put into the world. And so I feel it's important to point to this. You know, it's like anger doesn't lead to peace. Anger and hatred lead to more anger and hatred. Divisions, building walls, doesn't lead to cooperation in love. It leads to separation, divisions, self, other. So, you know, this movement to patience here for me means speaking out, but also recognizing I'm one voice and, you know, I don't know, you know, don't know what's going to happen. So it's some degree of patience with the outcome. So we cultivate patience through meeting suffering in the world, in our hearts, and exploring, you know, what does it mean to Again, it's the non-resistance of that suffering. The non-resistance of that suffering opens the heart to different ways to be in the world. One teacher, I love this phrase, says that we aim for a peaceful penetration of the irrational regions of our mind. This is what being with is about. We are opening to the irrational. We all have irrational stuff in there. You know, we're all subject to the the anger, the hatred that others act out on. And so there's a way in which we have to open to those with peace in our hearts. You know, our own reactivity, our own hatred, our own judging minds, our own sense of division that is present in all of our hearts. We all have that. But the way forward isn't to jump on the bandwagon of those patterns. The way forward isn't to pretend they're not there and try to repress them. The way forward paradoxically lies in this allowing to be with, to recognize the pain and the suffering of those very states in our hearts, and how with that recognition our hearts naturally begin to not want to go there. Our heart begins to release those patterns through this being with. And as we explore that being with, we gain the capacity to allow, to accept what's happening. We gain the capacity to, again, that allowing, that acceptance, this third aspect of patience, isn't about non-action. I want to read something about acceptance from one Zen teacher. To accept means to receive what is offered. The circumstances of life give rise to conditions, and our acceptance of these conditions is just the acceptance of things as they are. What is not meant by the Buddhist idea of acceptance is any agreement or disagreement with the way things are. That's important. I think sometimes when we think of acceptance, we think we have to convert our minds to agree with what's happening. Or to say this is okay that it's happening. We don't have to go there, but we have to recognize this: what's happening is what is happening. What is not meant by the Buddhist idea of acceptance is any agreement or disagreement with the way things are. Acceptance is about basing ourselves in reality, not about making judgments of liking and disliking. To accept a situation is to be grounded in the actual state of things, without getting lost in ideals or fantasies of how we would like things to be. We then have a good basis from which to see what action may be called for. Acceptance does not imply inertia. On the contrary, to be grounded in reality gives rise to a true response. This is really the acceptance that patience gives rise to. We recognize that what is here, the conditions that have come together in this moment, have created something that is already here. It's already here, what's happening right now. There's no point in denying that it's already here. In fact, any denial or resistance to what's already here limits our ability to be grounded in that reality, to step forward with a skillful response. And so that meeting, okay, this is what is happening right now. This is reality. This non-resistance to reality. That is acceptance. And that is moving in the direction of truth. What is actually here right now? What is already here right now? This requires a lot of courage to meet that reality without resistance, There's ways in which we very naturally resist pain. You know, we see pain in the world. We feel pain in ourselves, and you know, it's like, oh, I don't want that. I don't like that. And in some ways, that serves us in that it creates an action to move us away from the pain, perhaps, or to find solutions for the pain. And yet often that resistance, that moving away, comes out of aversion, comes out of resistance, comes out of tightening and constriction, as opposed to recognizing, yes, it's like this. What? So opening to what's already here. It kind of opens the door to wisdom that's available in our being to move us in a different direction. There's a lot of wisdom that is available when the mind stops shutting down, stops resisting. In fact, as we stop resisting, as we stop having greed and aversion about what's happening, there's a lot of wisdom that naturally comes up. A lot of love that naturally comes up. A lot of discernment about what's here and what a skillful action would be. So cultivating patience is a lot. It's a lot about this gentle persistence, the willingness to open to discomfort, and this cultivation of the stance of allowing. What might it mean to not resist this? Or if I am resisting it, what might it mean to allow the resistance? Kind of make the container bigger. So there's something happening and I don't like it. If I can't recognize, oh, well, the not liking is extra, sometimes we can acknowledge that. Sometimes just the recognizing, oh, not liking is happening. The not liking falls away and it's just, well, this is what's happening. You know, it's just, maybe it's fear. About something, we have a little. This happens a lot, actually. We have a little twinge in our knee when we're sitting in meditation, and there's a little. The mind starts thinking about that twinge in our knee, and we construct this huge story about what it might be and the problem. And oh no, it's like if I sit here for 30 minutes, I'm not going to be able to walk, and then I'm going to have surgery on my knee. And you know, it's like there's a twinge in the knee. That's what's actually happening, and the mind has created this story and generated fear. And so we can actually, sometimes we can step back and say, okay, yeah, there's fear here. And what's that fear about? Well, it's actually about the story. That's what the fear's about. What's actually happening? There's a little twinge in the knee. Okay, maybe I can recognize that. It's just a twinge in the knee. Sometimes we can recognize that. The reactivity is actually about our minds creating a story. And then that can fall away. Other times, there's something going on where there's actually, you know, perhaps a reason to be afraid. And so maybe it's not about trying to, you know, not have the fear, but about, oh, there's that thing happening and there's fear. Can I open to that? Can I be with the fear without being lost in the fear? Can I know that fear is happening? And again, you know, sometimes what fear is telling us to do is to get out of a situation. You know, it's like, it's not that we just stand there. It's, oh, this is fear. It's like, if you're watching a child play and that child runs into the road in front of a car and you feel fear, it's, oh, fear, fear. You know, you go after the child. You try to stop the child. You know, so it doesn't mean non-action. But it also means, you know, recognizing, oh, this is what's happening right now. So I want to leave a few minutes for comments or questions. Any comments or questions? And if you would use the mic, if you have something to offer.
Whenever I'm inquisitive about what's going on the inside, I find myself wanting to label the experience, and I feel like that kind of takes away from what the experience really is. It maybe actually guides my experience in a different direction. From the natural wisdom, what's actually going on the inside.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I was wondering how one can go about being inquisitive without jumping to that
without
next
labeling.
Step.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I do want to say something in support of labeling because it can be helpful. It depends on how it's used in a way. Sometimes, and there is actually some studies done that say that. You know, if you're recognizing, oh, there's fear happening right now or anger happening right now, if you're just knowing, oh, yeah, there's fear here, and you use a little note in your mind, a quiet whisper, fear or anger, that the use of that labeling is at least in the way I learned it, isn't to take the attention away from what's going on, but kind of just to acknowledge, oh, this is what's going on. And, there are some studies that say that our reactive emotions tend to be in the center, the reptilian part of the brain, and that noting or that labeling is in the cognitive part of the brain. And so it shifts some of the energy to a different part of the brain, which helps to normalize what's happening. So there's some benefit to the labeling. So I just want to say that. But often I think what happens is that it basically just becomes we're thinking about the word rather than really meeting the experience. One thing you could explore, I don't know if this would be a shift of it, but sometimes I find dropping in a kind of a question, not to think about the question, but just maybe a question like, so there's anger. How does it make the body feel? What is the experience of anger? So that it kind of brings you more into the being with, or maybe even just that reflection. What does it mean to be with anger? To open you to the fuller experience of what's here. And there's so much here. Sometimes it can be it can be helpful to. At first in the investigation to get kind of familiar with the different areas, you could explore, okay, so yeah, there's this emotion. Oh, I feel a constriction in the throat. I feel a tightening in the heart, a kind of a lump in the stomach. Okay, so there's that. There's those physical experiences. And then maybe there's a kind of a tensing throughout the body, so you can feel that. How does it make the being feel? Kind of in the emotional realm, it's like, oh, want to annihilate, or want to get out of here. So just kind of the bigger picture of what the feeling is. So sometimes those questions. Can put the mind into an investigative stance. But if you use questions like that, that you just start No. If you find that if you find that you just start thinking about the answers to the questions, then I'd see if it might make sense to see if you can feel. Go to the feeling side. What does it feel like to be with this? So when you find that you start labeling what happens, do you just go to the thinking?
I've noticed that I do that, and I've tried focusing more on the feeling, so not even being inquisitive about it, just trying to pull completely away from the words.
Yeah, and that's fine, actually. You know, the word investigation or inquisitiveness often takes us into thought. It's like it's related to thought somehow, but the investigation of experience is basically a wordless thing. Mm. You know, so you're curiosity about just what is the feeling, that is investigation. And we need to stop.
Okay.
So thank you.
Thank you.